Hello and welcome. We're going to study again today in the parables in a class we've entitled What in the World? And we're going to look today at Luke 12, if you wouldn't mind turning there, in the parable where Jesus taught about the man who was rich and stored up grain, but to whom God said, "You fool." And we're going to look at that and some of the scriptures surrounding that to try to understand the best we can what Jesus was teaching us on that. Let's have a prayer and we'll begin. Our Father in heaven, we're thankful to you for this time we have to study your word. We're thankful that you preserved your word and brought it to us so that we could study it and understand it together. We are thankful to you more than anything for your son Jesus and for his sacrifice. We ask that you would help us to live lives of obedience and service and that we would be like him in everything we do. We pray in his name and amen. All right, so like I said, we're going to look at Luke 12, and I think this continues. I hope you've seen that Jesus' parables all have some common themes that surround some very important core principles in the kingdom. He is teaching people about the kingdom, but the principles are all very well interrelated, and this definitely will fit into that category, I think you'll see. So let's go ahead and turn to Luke 12, and let's begin reading in verse 13. So in verse 13 it says, "Someone in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me.' But he said to him, 'Man, who appointed me judge or arbitrator over you?' Then he said to them, 'Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions.'" Let's stop there for a moment. First of all, I would say if we just read that, that's a message, right? That's enough content right there that Jesus has taught. But it is interesting that he starts off here, and he's been teaching here about confessing his name and about having the confidence to confess his name in front of other people and defend him. And in the middle of that, he is interrupted by a person who says, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And what he's asking for really is to maybe get more out of the inheritance than he was originally intended. Maybe he was looking to twist the law. He knew Jesus was really good at the law. But he's trying to take advantage right now of the authority of Jesus and saying, hey, if Jesus says this or if Jesus can help me figure this out, then I'll get more money. This is, of course, we all understand the idea of a shrewd attorney, of trying to get a good attorney to get us the best judgment we can. And that's what he saw Jesus as, a really good lawyer that could help him split his inheritance. But he comes at this with Jesus out of context, in the middle of this discussion of something else. And Jesus, his response to him, I think, is classic. And of course, I know that I'm not translating it properly, but when it says man, I think I just see Jesus expressing some level of frustration with him, like, man, who appointed me judge or arbitrator over you? It's a fair response to saying, what are you talking about? Why am I a judge over how to split up your family inheritance? Nobody made me that. And that's what then turns Jesus. It's one of these things where this guy asks this question and then Jesus makes a whole speech. My kids do that sometimes. Like the kids will be arguing or the kids will have some issue. And then I'll come over and I'll say, hey, listen. And I'll start and the kids will actually verbalize, oh, here comes a speech. You know, oh, here comes daddy's speech about this. And it's kind of funny, I guess, but I've done it enough times. But this guy stands there then and has to listen to Jesus teach the whole crowd about how wrong he was about this principle. So he says, then he said to them, be on your guard against every form of greed. Another word used there is covetousness. Because not even when one has abundance does his life consist of his possessions. So this statement, though, is very important where he says, beware and be on guard against every form of covetousness and greed. That's a strong statement. This is him saying there is an attack coming against you. There is a war on you, an onslaught of covetousness, of greed. This is going to come after you, and it is a true threat. So when he says beware, we really need to listen, because he's saying this is something that you need to be very careful of, because it is coming after you, and it is a threat to you. And that's when he then goes into this parable about the man who is storing his grain. So let's read that section now, and let's look at what he says here in verse 16. And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" Let's look at this. There's a lot here. And this isn't one that is particularly hard to understand, the message that he's teaching, but I think that sometimes we do not properly make the application of what he's teaching here. So let's look at this. He says that this rich man, it says he had a very productive field, and he said, "What should I do? What do I do about this? I have so much production, so much money or so much grain." And he says, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and I'll store all my grain and my goods in there. I'll just keep building up, you know, these barns, or we might even, this concept of silos, of just keep on piling it up and create a storage of all this stuff. And that's where I'll put it all." I do have to say, this always makes me think, I've driven through down the roads in Illinois and seen all of the, where they store all the corn and the grain. I've seen the barns and how big they are. We don't have a lot of that in Florida, in Tampa. But there is one I always see and I always notice, and I want to show you that. You'll recognize it, but it's kind of out of place. But this is what I think of whenever I think of this idea of building up barns and silos to store grain. So let me show you that. So we're driving here near 12th and Nebraska, Bush Boulevard, and you probably recognize this, these silos here. I tried to figure out what they are and why they are here, but clearly at some point people were storing something here. You see they've got the grain elevators, and it's just designed to store a whole lot of something. We'll look at it from the other angle here. It reminds me of the time that I was driving and there was a big set of silos who had an advertisement on them. It was across, it said Amazon, and I thought, I wonder what that is. This was in the early 2000s. I thought maybe I should invest in that company, and I went and looked them up, and I thought, oh no, that'll never work, and didn't. So that was a really good decision. But anyway, you see what I'm talking about here. All right, so you get the idea. This guy has so much production that he has to just pile it up. He has to just keep piling it up and keep building barns to store it. And then he says, so I'll say to my soul, you know, it's like, so I'll say to myself, self, you have so many goods. You have so much now. Now you can relax. Now you're really set. Your life is good now. Because of all this storehouse you've got, you now can just lay back and be happy because you now have all this stuff. And that's when God says to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And this is not a difficult thing for us to understand. We use this all the time. It's like you've made all this preparation, you've got all this stuff, and now it's the end. You stored it up for living on earth for years and years and having a great life, but he said, this very night your soul was required of you. And it's almost like he's saying, your grain is not required of you. You've piled up all the grain, you've got it all stored up over there. God didn't come and say, tonight your grain is required of you, and here it is. And he can say, oh great, I've got plenty. He says, no, tonight your soul is required of you. Is that ready? The storing up of the grain, the piling of the grain, who was that for? It was for him. It was for his own personal security. It was for his own personal happiness. But God came and said, you prepared the wrong thing. You've got piled up silos of grain, but tonight your soul is required of you. And then he says, and now who will own what you prepared? Whose is that going to be? Somebody else is going to have that now. It doesn't do you any good. And it says, that's the way it is with a man who stores up treasure. That is, in this case, he starts bringing money into it, stores up treasure, gets all his preparation done for here, but he's not rich toward God. And so this is the question that I think we'll ask when we continue, because we want to continue on now, because Jesus continues this, and I think he answers the question in verse 33. But the question is, why is he a fool? What makes this person a fool? And what does it mean to be rich toward God? That's, to me, the important point he's making here, which is if you're going to be rich toward God, what does that mean? What are you going to do? So let's continue on, and we'll look now as Jesus continues to tell why he's a fool and what it means to be rich toward God. So look in verse 22, and we'll continue there. And he said to his disciples, "For this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor for your body as to what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom, no barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than the birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add one single hour to his lifespan? If then you cannot do even a very little thing, why do you worry about other matters?" We'll look at this for just a moment. He says, so the transition here is he's a fool. He is not rich toward God. And he says, so for this reason, because of what I'm talking about here, don't worry about your life as what you're going to eat or what you're going to drink or your body or what clothes you're going to wear. He said, life is more than food. And so what he's pointing out here, that the meaning of life is not about storehouses. It is not about things. It is not about that type of security. And I think he's establishing a principle here that worry is the enemy to humility. And that doesn't sound right necessarily, but worry is the enemy to selflessness. When we worry about ourselves, when we worry about our money, when we focus on those things, it leads to sickness and it leads to selfishness. That when we focus on those things, it steals our opportunity to look at others first and to be selfless and to care about others more than ourselves. And I think that sometimes we don't see the danger of worry. I think a lot of people who worry a lot think they may be the most spiritual people, that they are always fretting about things, that they're always worried about things, and that may be a very spiritual trait. But he says here, worry demonstrates a focus on the wrong things. And he says, consider the ravens. You know, look at the birds. And I like how he said, they don't have storerooms or barns. You know, the birds don't have a giant silo to stick all their grain in. They do just fine. And the first thing he says here, and he's going to go on in a minute and talk about the flowers. But he says, you worry about this and you worry about these things, but you cannot add a single day to your life. You cannot change yourself in one way by storing up treasures on earth. You cannot change your lifespan. You cannot change your eternity with those things. He says, all evidence from the birds and the flowers, all evidence points to God taking care of us, that God is going to take care of that. We'll talk more about that in a minute, but I want to see here first this principle that worry prevents good. That the idea of what we're to store up is faith and good deeds. That there is this principle he's teaching here that when we worry about these things, about how much grain we have stored, about how much money we have, when that's our focus, it prevents good. Now let's continue on and see what he says here in verse 27. In verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. But I tell you, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass in the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, you men of little faith? This is just another example he says here. This is another piece of evidence that God takes care of his people. That God takes care of the lilies, God takes care of the ravens, and they don't store up treasures, but they're taken care of. They don't worry about those things. And he says, he even does that for the grass. He even takes care of the grass. But the principle here is that the focus of our lives has to be on faith and goodness, not on storing up things for ourselves. Now, I want to just say here, I'm not saying that Jesus is teaching that we don't need to be a good steward of our money. He's not teaching here that we don't need to save or take care of, you know, the security of our families. Or, that is not what I'm trying to say here, and that's not what he's trying to say. Clearly, working and saving and preparing are spiritual concepts. But what he's saying here is, what is your focus? What is it that you're doing to prepare for the future? Is it that you're preparing only for your financial future at the expense of your spiritual future? That's a hard thing, though. It is a really hard balance to strike, because when we say, you know, it's a good thing to save and ensure the security of our family, all of a sudden we expand that into something that is more than what God intended. And so he continues then in verse 29. Oh, and I should say that he ends this by saying, you men of little faith. This is another thing. He says, you know, one of the principles he teaches here is that the opposite of storing up grain for yourself or storing up all of these riches for yourself is faith. He says the way that you defend against that is you have faith. You need to know that God will take care of you and that his plan works. And we'll see more of that here in the next set of verses. So let's look at verse 29. In verse 29, do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink, and do not keep worrying, for all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek. But your Father knows that you need these things. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. So much in this set of verses that, and this is a verse a lot of us could just quote from memory, but I hope you see how important it is that it's in this context. That he says, don't seek what you'll eat and what you'll drink, and don't keep worrying. Once again, he's not saying, don't go get food, don't eat and drink. He's saying, stop worrying about that. Stop letting that be the focus of your lives. And he said, the world seeks these things. This is what the worldly people are focused on, are obsessed with. But he says, your Father knows you need these things. You have to trust that he knows you need this. I think sometimes when we're doing something for someone, we could be offended by them not thinking we have their best interest in mind. And that's kind of what this is, that we're saying, God gets this. God understands you need these things. Don't act like he doesn't realize you have to eat and drink, that you have to have some place to live. He knows it. And it says, seek his kingdom and these things will be added to you. This is how God's plan works. If we focus on the right things, his plan accounts for these needs. If we spend our lives dedicated to good, if we spend our lives dedicated to good deeds and service and love, this is going to get taken care of. And his plan accounts for that. He is not going to let his children go hungry. Now, I don't know that that necessarily means that if we don't think at all about money or food or if we don't think about those things, God will just gift it to us. That all of a sudden this money will show up in our mailbox or food will show up at our house, that a miracle will happen. That's not necessarily what I think he's saying here. What he's saying is a person whose life is dedicated to good and dedicated to his service, his life of faith and good deeds, that person is going to be taken care of. His plan is designed for that. And so we see him continue this idea. And by the way, I think it's interesting to think about how he says in verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. This is, he says, this, he's planned for this. He has chosen to do this. And I always think of Ephesians 1, and I love looking at Ephesians 1 because it's such a good story about God's plan for us. Let's look there briefly about this idea that God has chosen to give us the kingdom. In Ephesians 1 and verse 3, it says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ, just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we would be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us to adoption as sons through Jesus Christ to himself, according to the kind intention of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, which he freely bestowed upon us in the beloved. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished on us in all wisdom and insight. there's a lot more to go there, and this is almost one run-on sentence all the way through verse 14. It is hard to even take a breath reading this. There is so much being said here, and everything intertwines so perfectly. But I just love that he says here that he's blessed us with every spiritual blessing. In love, he predestined us to adoption as sons through his will, and that we have redemption in his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses. God planned before the foundation of the world that we would have the ability to be adopted as children into his family. This word predestined sometimes scares us, but it says here, he predestined us to adoption. He knew before we were even created that he had a plan for us to be adopted as sons into his kingdom, and that his kingdom, in the forgiveness of our sins and this mercy and grace he gives us, he planned for that before history began for us. And that verse is so meaningful to me. It is so important to see that we get to be adopted as sons into the family of God, even though we were not born into the physically into the family of God. And so we go back to look at Luke 12, this idea that it says, don't be afraid. Have faith. The Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Do not be afraid. God has planned for you. God's got this taken care of. And he's planned before the world even began that you're going to be taken care of, physically and spiritually. Now, I think he brings it to a head here in verse 33, because then he continues to answer the question, what does it mean to be rich toward God? We've said already that we have faith, that this faith in God and this faith that God will take care of us is part of it. But he says more in verse 33. Let's look there. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. This is another one of the most famous verses in the Bible that we can quote. And I think seeing its context was very helpful to me to see what he's saying here, where he says, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven. This is that. This is the money belt. It's like where you know. That's the money belt. Is this idea of the storehouse of money? Thieves aren't going to come steal your spiritual treasure. And he says, where you store up your treasure, where you pile up your treasure, that's where your heart is. So in the case of this rich man, this man who had productive fields, his treasure was in these silos. That's where his heart was too. And it said, and when he said to himself, soul, now you can eat, drink, and be merry, it was because his heart was in the short game. His heart was in preparing for this short-term life. Sometimes I think we make the mistake of looking at this, and I guess it's not a mistake, but we look at this and we say, yeah, he's teaching us these principles that about the attitude we need to have. We need to have this attitude of selflessness and this attitude of giving and this attitude of faith. And that's true. I agree with that. But he is teaching a behavior here. He is teaching a way to act, not just a thought process. We have to take it to that next step, because I think when he says, sell your possessions and give to the poor, make for yourselves money belts which don't wear out. This idea of when we talk about this idea of making spiritual money belts, that's the spiritual concept and the attitude. But when he says, sell your possessions and give to the poor, this is a behavior that he's talking about. This is not just an attitude. And sometimes I think that we have this idea that because we do not support institutions or community institutions, because we do not spend our collective money on programs in the community, that we're not supposed to actually give to the poor. This admonition he gives here is not to a church. When he says sell your possessions and give to the poor, it is to a person. It is to an individual who is responsible for having not just a giving attitude, but a behavior of giving. I think about a story, and if you've been in a class of mine, you might have heard this story before, so forgive me. But I tell this story about the time I was at Target, and my family, you know, listen, I got four kids, and so we go to Target to eat lunch sometimes. And they had a thing where pretty much every kid could get what they wanted. So, you know, give me a break. So we were there eating one day, and we were all sitting around. All the kids were pretty little. And there was a man sitting at a table over a little ways from us, and it was an old man who looked homeless. He was an old, haggard man, and he kept walking over to the machine and just getting water in a cup, filled up in a cup. And he would go over there, and the kids were noticing him. We were all noticing him. And my kids were kind of asking, what's the deal with that guy over there? And, you know, of course, go ahead and mention the fact that I ate at a place that homeless people also eat. But, okay. So the guy was over there, and my kids were asking about it. And so I decided to take this opportunity to make a great impassioned speech. And I do this all the time and get myself in trouble. I was like, you know, kids, there are people less fortunate than us in this world. There are people who struggle to even get food. There are people that struggle to even have places to live. And we have to have a helpful attitude toward them. And we need to do things to help them. We need to always be looking for people to help that are homeless or that struggle with even basic needs. And so I made this really good speech about that to teach my kids a really good lesson. And Brady, who's the smart aleck of the family, immediately goes, well, go help him. And my response was, I was like, no, you don't understand. No, wait, you don't understand exactly what I'm talking about here. And as I'm trying to fumble through a response to Brady, he said, you know what? He's right. Yeah, there's a guy over there and I'm making a speech. I'm talking about this attitude we're supposed to have toward less fortunate people. And so I got up. And I went over there, and I have to tell you, it was one of the things that I'm most thankful that I did. Brady was exactly right, that I was all talk and no game. And I walked over, and I met him. His name was Randall, and I met him, and we now, to this day, call him Mr. Randall, even though he's not alive anymore. But we met him, and all the kids went over and met him, and we bought him some food, and we started a relationship with him where we saw him frequently, and we talked to him, and it was a positive thing. It was a positive lesson for me, and hopefully for my kids as well. But it I always think back to that, about this idea that sometimes we think, somebody will take care of them. I give my money to this place, but somebody will take care of those people. Or we should have an attitude, a positive attitude toward needy people. But Jesus teaches a concept here, and he teaches a behavior. Let's look at Matthew 19, and I think that you'll recognize that it's another passage that I think we believe teaches just a principle, and it does teach a principle, but it also teaches a behavior. So Matthew 19, in verse 16, and someone came to him and said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" And he said to him, "Why are you asking me about what is good? There is only one who is good, but if you wish to enter into life, keep the commandments." Then he said to him, "Which ones?" And Jesus said, "You shall not commit murder, not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself." The young man said to him, "All these things I have kept. What am I still lacking?" Jesus said to him, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." But when the young man heard this statement, he went away grieving, for he was one who owned much property. This is another passage which has clear principles. That is, this man was doing good. He was following the commandments, but Jesus pointed out where he was weak. And he said, "Well, here's what you're lacking. Sell your possessions and give to the poor." And it said he went away sorrowful. And often what we do is look at this and say, we should not ignore the poor. We should not have a negative attitude about that. We should be willing to give to the poor. But he says, sell your possessions and give to the poor. I think that's what this man needed to do. I think this is what was in the way of this man's salvation. This is what was the obstacle for this person from being a lost person to a saved person, was that he was unwilling to give up his possessions. He was unwilling to give to the poor. The idea of poor people, the focus of poor people is all over the New Testament. It is all over Jesus' ministry. It is a clear idea. Jesus even says that he came in Luke 4. He came to preach the gospel to the poor, not just the poor in spirit. He came to preach it to the poor, the helpless, the homeless, the people who had no hope. This gospel was for them. And I think we should see that as well. Our evangelism and our good deeds are to be focused on the most needy people. Jesus teaches here that if we really want to focus on the right things, if we really want to prepare for the proper future, it isn't just preparing our own financial future and piling up treasures for ourselves. It is selling those things in order to accomplish the purposes of his kingdom. And in many cases, specifically in giving to poor people, it is a behavior that he is teaching. There is a connection between giving and the heart. There's a connection between actually giving and the heart. Even 1 Corinthians 16, in the passage that we use as a principle for our weekly collection, and that we give every week, if you read that, it is about giving to the needy saints in Jerusalem. Paul was coming to take up the collection that they were taking on a weekly basis because it had to go to needy people in Jerusalem. It is built into all of these principles that there is a correlation between faith and good deeds toward the poor and a focus on the right future. I hope that you see that. I hope that you see that it's not just an attitude, though it is. It is teaching a principle. It is teaching an attitude. He was teaching a behavior. Instead of storing up things for yourselves, give and focus on others and focus on good deeds. Also, don't worry about yourself. Worry is the enemy of faith. It is the enemy of good. The whole point he makes here is, what future are you preparing for? What are you doing to prepare for your long-term future? Are you focused on the wrong things and it is keeping you from doing the love and good deeds and giving that is required? Is it keeping you from having faith and trusting God that his plan works? I hope you see that. I hope you see how important it is that we not only understand the principle of faith and good deeds, but that we live a life in the behavior of demonstration of faith and in the demonstration of good toward those who need it the most. Thank you for listening today. I hope this was helpful to you. I really love this parable, and it really, to me, teaches us a lot, and I hope that it did help you as well. Looking forward to seeing you again next time when we continue this study.